first things first. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter, and just like he is every day, Mr. Nick Wright. Good to see you guys.
Good morning, Jenna.
You as well, Jenna.
I didn't know what shirt you were looking for. But
oh,
glad
yeah,
you
yeah,
found
I got it. Yeah, yeah, we're okay.
Look over, your hands under there. It's all good. Hey, we've got a great show today. Thank you, by the way, for that compliment.
No problem.
I'm on an 8-second delay. The Lakers are reportedly worried about LeBron's health. Mike Tomlin's coming to the defense of Big Ben, but we start the television program with the New England Patriots. Even before the news of Gronk retiring, the champs were looking for more weapons for Tom Brady. Antonio Brown, in a head-scratching move, released an audio tape of a conversation he had with his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, where they discussed the Patriots' interest in making an offer for him, for Antonio Brown. The Patriots also reportedly inquired about Odell Beckham Jr. as well. CC, those are big names, which I'm sure would warrant big money. How much would a top wide receiver help extend Tom Brady's career, if you look at it from first the football perspective?
Well, talent always helps. But the thing about that is there's two different rules in the NFL. There is what New England does and what the rest of the league does. The rest of the league, man, as far as your offense, it's not going to be as efficient as possible unless you have a top flight, a number one bona fide receiver. But New England, through the years, how they decide to move the football, they've done it a couple different styles. The first few Super Bowls, it was ground and pound, good defense, turn the ball over, play on the short field, play the percentages, all that. Tom Brady came into his own, top five offense in the league. Throw it as much as you want to it. Take advantage of the running backs on linebackers, tight ends on linebackers and nickelbacks. Take advantage of the rules in the passing game. This last Super Bowl, the Rams don't have one linebacker on their roster over 230 yards. You know what we're getting ready to do? We're getting ready to jam the ball down their throat. They play the Chargers. The Chargers don't happen to have any big linebackers. You know what they're getting ready to do? Jam the ball down their throat. So they know how to do this as far as style. And the number one thing that I see with New England is how they're going to manage the salary cap. And as long as Tom Brady is playing, Belichick has had a philosophy where Tom Brady has basically given them, man, carte blanche to be able to take him at a discounted rate that no team in the history of the league has ever had that type of advantage. And Belichick, what he's going to spend on the salary, on aging players. Like, so the best receiver Brady had was Randy Moss. And how did he get him?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, he was playing his way out of Oakland. They could get him dirt cheap for a fourth-round pick. And why did he lose Randy?
And he took a pay cut.
Took a pay cut to,
so he
to
only
go
went
there
for
to prove
a
himself.
And came there to prove himself.
And why did he end up getting shipped out?
Because he was doing great on the field and said, I want to be one of the top play wide receivers. Oh, it's time to go bye-bye.
See you later. And now, that's why, listen, I didn't think the Antonio Brown trade ever was a real possibility. As soon as New England heard part of trading for Antonio Brown was going to be giving him a new contract, that's, I think, because they could have easily trumped what the Raiders gave in draft compensation. The Odell situation, I thought, was more interesting because I don't think Odell's getting a new contract anytime soon. His new contract kicks in this year. Like, he is on his new contract. Mm-hmm. And because the signing bonus portion was already paid by the Giants, Odell at around $15 million a year, that doesn't break the bank for New England. They pay Stephon Gilmore around $11 million per year. Like,
yep,
that would be in line with the way the Patriots do things, but they weren't going to come up with the draft compensation that obviously the Browns did. They weren't going to give up a first, a third, and a player. So for New England, probably would have been a first and a second. But as far as the need, Jenna, how important is it? I don't think having a great wide receiver extends Brady's length of career. I think it extends his ability to stay in this second or third prime he has discovered. Because if we think about Tom Brady, the MVP caliber Tom Brady, not the game manager champion Tom Brady, that started in 07 with Moss. And from 07 to 2017, he basically went uninterrupted with an elite level pass catcher. Moss to Gronk until last year. And Gronk last year was no longer an elite-level pass catcher. And what did you see? You saw Brady's numbers take a haircut. You saw the Patriots' offensive numbers take a haircut, and you saw them have to reinvent themselves. They were still super effective.
But it's why we talked about the re-emphasis on the run game for the Patriots, because they had no one they were going to throw the ball to.
Right. Last year was the first time in a decade the Patriots did not have a bona fide, legitimate, number one receiving option. We haven't looked at them as having that because their number one receiving option had been a tight end. But he was so dominant as far as yards per catch and in the red zone, that's who he was. They are now in a position where they go into next year without that spot. It's why we had talked, if you could set the personality stuff aside, Odell would have been devastating for them. Odell playing all the wide receiver positions, Odell playing the slot some, Odell on those choice routes, but they obviously didn't want to come up with the draft compensation. But I'm not surprised at all they considered it because of how brilliantly he would have fit what they do offensively.
Well, it's just not only because of him. Belichick does his homework. Like, as far as pro football, he's the most thorough at every aspect of it, knowing the rules, what you can do, the practices, what you can do in the games, what you can do, free agent and players. How many other bad players on other teams has he turned into real productive players? That's what he does. And they have looked at trying to upgrade the wide receiver or their patch catchers. That's what they did. They were in a – I mean, they did something special when they drafted Hernandez and Gronk.
Yep.
Like, they realized how valuable pass catchers were. I just believe at this point, there's not a wide receiver that's going to make Tom Brady's career longer. Because when Tom Brady's tired of playing football, like, he's going to quit playing football. But as far as them not having a number one and having the luxury of Gronk, even though he was a tight end, being a number one wide receiver, that is going to have to be addressed. I don't believe they can continue to be dominant and be a run-oriented football team, which they were last year.
There was a report that you know, the Patriots were very interested in Antonio Brown, but the Steelers didn't want, for obvious reasons, to give the Patriots to bolster them. I'm sure they know the same thing that we're talking about here. This may not be the best year for the Patriots. Why go ahead and is there something to the fact that maybe teams like the Giants or the Steelers wouldn't want to deal with the Patriots want to help Tom Brady out when he's going to obviously clearly need it?
I think the Steelers are in a very unique position. I think teams in the AFC East and teams that think they are contending for championships in Tom Brady's window, obviously, in the AFC, they obviously don't want to help the New England Patriots. So I get that part of it, and I disregarded that when I was talking about why the Antonio thing didn't happen. We had talked about that, about how the Steelers might say, no AFC North teams and not the Patriots because we're trying to win now. The Giants fans might have a rivalry with the Patriots, but those organizations, the Giants were going to take the best deal possible. They're not competing on the Patriots champ, the Tom Brady window. I think the Giants love the idea of sending Odell to the AFC, whether it was the Browns, the Patriots, the Jets, maybe not the Jets because they're in New York, the Bills, whomever it would be. So, no, I don't think that is part of it. The only place where having a dominant receiver could, I think, extend the length that Brady plays is, see, you mentioned he's going to play until he doesn't want to play anymore. Well, what Tom Brady is playing for is to win Super Bowls. And if you add talent to where they are, if the Patriots go 9-7 one year, that'll probably be Brady's last year. It won't be as fun for him. But if you have continue to be dominant, continue to appear in AFC championship games at a minimum, why would he stop?
But this is the thing with Brady. Brady believes in Belichick more than any of us do. Brady sees what they've done, how they've won Super Bowls, how they've reinvented themselves, how they changed, how they were defense, what they did this year. So Brady's got confidence in him. Brady never goes demanding, hey, you know something? I need a wide receiver. Like, because he knows that Belichick is the best at pro football and will get him the necessary. You think Brady came up with the concept, let's go out and get Josh Gordon. Oh, yeah, he's not doing well. Let's go out and get him. No, he depends on the system of their scouting and what they do to be able to bring him the type of talent and come up with a game plan with Josh being there, the overall continuity, with Dante Scarnecchia being there. Like, at some point, we just have to believe they know football better than everyone else. There was a better chance of me playing for the Patriots than Antonio Brown, okay? Like, because two big problems. Pittsburgh wasn't going to train. Kevin Colbert, the general manager, he wasn't going to trade to them because if they're going to get to a Super Bowl, listen, they got to go through them. And Antonio's demands of wanting a new contract, that would have never happened in New England. That's why I don't believe that probability. Odell has the type of contract that I thought they might take a chance on, but his personality would scare them away. So that's why I don't believe that was a fit.
Gotcha. All right, we'll talk more about this coming up. But on the other side, is LeBron James' health the Lakers' biggest concern? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. We'll get to the Lakers in just a second, but first, Wizards and Suns, and Jeff Green turns back the clock with this dunk on Dragon Bender.
Jeff Green. What up, C?
Jeff Green trying to get some get back, man.
Of course.
After he got his foot stepped on in L.A. the night before.
Listen, Jeff Green, this is the time of year he's got to turn it on. About to be contract time for Jeff Green. Go get that money, my man.
Warriors and Grizzlies.
Reunite with LeBron.
Different Green. Draymond unleashes the full court pass to KD for the buzzer beating.
Randy Moss. He mossed him.
He did.
Oh, yeah. 2.2. Great play. Great throw by Draymond. Great catch by KD, putting his body on him, shielding him, making sure he can keep the ball over the outside shoulder, just the way I teach it to the kids. Okay, KD. I like it.
Lakers Jazz. Donovan Mitchell spins away from Lance Stephenson and slams it home.
No, I'm going to tell you, you always try to give JaVale McGee credit. Like, man, Chris, he's really smart. Oh, yeah, he's really smart. He's getting ready to get punched on right here.
Well, I'm not going to give him credit for this. You're 7'2", JaVale. Go up and contest.
You said he was smart.
Listen, I said off the court he's smart. You told me I've stopped
he
bringing that
He was off
up.
The court. He
okay,
did.
Yeah.
Same game. Scott Machado tosses up the alley-oop to Alex Caruso, who puts it down.
The old Scott Machado to Alex Caruso. What is this, Karate Kid? Alley-oop.
Didn't we think about moving the show to L.A., man? Didn't someone?
Chris was like, man, Nick, with your relationships, with the Lakers going to be important, we got to do this show in L.A. Now it's a Machado-Caruso combo.
And you can see with his relationships, we're in New York City.
Sticking with the Lakers. That was a real laugh. I would never have laughed like that.
It's so funny.
Among their many needs this offseason, a new head coach. All signs pointing to Luke Walton being let go after this disappointing season. The Lakers reportedly have their sights set on Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle. The issue there being Carlisle's under contract with Dallas until 2023. When asked about it, Mark Cuban said, LOL, LOL, that's my quote. Nick, what's the most important quality in the Lakers' next head coach?
Proven, established coach that understands modern offensive basketball, in short. And a guy that understands how his team cannot just get mollywopped in the 8 to 12 minutes a game LeBron doesn't play. No, seriously. The 8 to 12 minutes a game LeBron doesn't play don't get outscored by a dozen points, like as has been a problem for LeBron not only this year but the last few years, if we're being honest. But I'm really curious who is – I tried to do some digging on this when I saw this yesterday, and I can get no straight answer. Who is leaking these names? Where? How was Rick Carlisle ever a realistic option? Like, I didn't understand it. Like, we mentioned it yesterday. Of course he'd be a great fit. He's one of the five best coaches in basketball. You could argue he's the second best coach.
Yeah, he's in the five best coaches, but probably one of the most underrated coaches. So – even if people want to question, oh, that might be a little high for him. Well, he's definitely one of the two or three most underrated coaches. Way he teaches basketball, the scheme that he runs, and the atmosphere that he has with Mark Cuban, everything that they do as far as taking care of the players. Let's not forget who the Dallas Mavericks were. The Dallas Mavericks were the first team that had duplicated their locker room. They duplicated their locker room because they wanted the visiting team to feel like they were at home. So any potential visiting player felt like, as a free agent, this is how we treat the people. Mark Cuban catered the meals for the visiting team. Only team in the NBA to be able to do it. So
Their plane is a luxury nightclub. Like the Mavs are as good of an organization in sports. They now have an incredibly bright future.
Yes.
You've got Luka Doncic. You have Chris Stapps, who I understand people are a little ambivalent on him, but they feel they're bullish on where they're going. And Carlisle's a champion there. So, like, the idea, like, I expect Pop to be the next Lakers rumor. Listen, Los Angeles, you're in a rough spot on the coaching search. Because you do not have the luxury of going with a Nick Nurse type. And by that I mean, hey, an up-and-coming assistant coach that we think could be really good.
Yeah, and the reason why you can't do that one because that was the plan you just had.
Well, it was the plan you just had, yeah. And you cannot go for upside. You have to go for certainty. Because you've got two or three years to contend with LeBron as an MVP caliber player. And I know some people think maybe that's too many years. Like that's maybe it's only 1 or 2 years. I'll say 2 or 3 years as LeBron is MVP caliber player. So you have to go with the known quantity. So the known quantities are Ty Lue and guys who have been fired because they didn't work out other places, or guys currently in the league. But You can't just shoot for bullseyes. Like, Carlisle is a spectacular coach. He's one of only a handful of coaches in the league that has won a championship with his current team. Those guys don't walk.
And Cuban loves him. No one's going to let him. I mean, there's just so many reasons.
To me, it speaks to the mismanagement that the Lakers have constantly done under the new regime. Well, let's just put two names out there that, guys, I know I can't get. Doc Rivers already has a secret agreement with the owner. They just hadn't signed it. It's just a matter of time. So that was laughable as far as that name being released. Rick Carlisle going to coach, leaving Dallas when Dallas just got right. Like, they're going to be in the lottery. And now with the two stars, Dirk Nowitzki is holding off retirement. You know the reason why? Because things are bright in Dallas. Things are nice in Dallas. It makes no sense for Dirk to retire. He might as well stay an extra year. That's how good things are for the Mavericks right now.
And so the other thing, to circle back to your question, I didn't mean disregard it. The other most important thing, other than the X's and O's part, and I mean understanding the modern NBA offense, which I don't think Luke Walton does, and I think a lot of coaches in the NBA, to be fair, don't. I'm not sure Mark Jackson does, and he's one of the names on the list. It's why I'm squeamish on him. I know Jason Kidd doesn't. Is you do have to command the respect of LeBron. And this is something Broussard said, and a lot of people have taken that as, are you kidding me? Why would LeBron not instantly respect whatever coach comes in? Man, because it's real life. And not everyone commands instant respect. Maybe in an ideal situation you would, and that doesn't mean LeBron would act disrespectfully to somebody, but someone that LeBron feels can actually be, to steal a term from our friend Coach Mangini, a force multiplier. Someone who can be a value add. Who is that? It's the only reason to me it's not a sure shot it's going to be Ty Lue is because we don't know who's going to get fired this offseason. And sometimes good coaches get fired because ownership gets impatient because of some situation. So we don't know who else is going to be available. But to me, Ty Lue is the guy that we know checks those boxes.
This is a very strange year for LeBron. He doesn't make the playoffs for the first time in as long as he can remember. Mm-hmm. He suffers a major injury, which sidelined him to the point where his team is out of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Now there's a report out there that the Lakers are actually genuinely concerned about LeBron's health. Do you agree with that? Are you concerned about LeBron's health moving forward?
Well, anytime you have that first injury, you know, I think that all bets are off now till the end. That's the first one. We've seen it happen now. And now everything becomes important. That's why I would have rested him this whole time. Everyone else was saying, oh, he should play and everything. No, he had a significant injury. He rushed himself back. You could see it when he got back. He was not in the type of shape. But I believe that the injury, like most great players, or most players, they play through injuries. They aren't able to get the type of numbers. So I believe his injury was significant. I believe that this offseason becomes the most important offseason he's had in a lot of offseasons, not only because of the free agents, because what's he going to do from a cardio standpoint? Now, I do believe in LeBron James. And I believe in him so much because I heard this report. I went back and watched game one of the finals last year. And good Lord. LeBron James, if he's even close to where he was, forget about what he did in the Eastern Conference, all those series, but what he did against the Warriors in game one, if you happen to just forgot about it, go back and watch it. And what he did in that game, the numbers he put up, how he dominated the Warriors, even though they did lose, JR didn't call a timeout, didn't shoot that game. Man, he was incredible. So for me, I am concerned, Jenna, now because I know that injury was significant. I'm concerned about this offseason, what he's going to do. And ultimately, I do know, regardless of how healthy he is, if he don't get another star, he's not going to be able to win. So there's a number of concerns that makes this offseason very important.
And there was a really interesting social media post by the lady who helped him recover from his injury.
Yes.
I think we talked about this off the air, where she said, listen, essentially, he tore his groin, and it's a six-month injury. And she talked about how shocked she was he was back in 6 weeks. Now, that does speak to Chris's point, that if that's true, and I was adamant he needs to play, if that's true, then it was foolish for him to ever come back. If it is true, like, then they knew they weren't winning a championship this year. Forget coming back and being on the shelf. They should have just said, man,
shelf him.
And, by the way, the Lakers stock was really high at that moment. It's like, wow, before LeBron got hurt, beating the Warriors, seemed like real contenders, bad luck. The optimistic angle is, despite the injury, despite not being 100%, since he's been back 28-9-10, 28-9-10 in his averages. Mm-hmm. The other optimistic part of it is, since his rookie year, the three worst years of his career, first year in Miami, first year back in Cleveland, and now this year with the Lakers. The pessimistic side is, yeah, but this year is the latest year. And he's at 50,000 plus minutes. And in the last eight seasons, he's played 11 because of the playoff runs. And once you get hurt, you tend to start getting hurt. That is what NBA history says. That is what athletic history says. And there was another odd moment, and Windhorst alluded to it in his article the other night, where he slipped on the floor and banged his knee. Those are the types of things LeBron has been as good as any athlete I've ever seen at avoiding. You and I talked about this once. You asked me why he's been so good at not getting hurt. Some of it's his body. Some of it's his training. Some of it is he's been able to avoid those fracases where guys fall, where bodies, like, he knows
what
rebound to go for and what rebound not to. So there is real concern.
Yeah.
The one all-time great athlete who had never been injured got injured. And is that a trend or is an outlier? We won't know until next year.
All right, we'll break there. Coming up, Mike Tomlin speaks out on Big Ben. Hear from him next on First Things First. On Saturday, the season's biggest free agents hit the field with their new teams. First, Bryce Harper and the Phillies take on Freddie Freeman and the Braves. Then the Giants face off against Manny Machado and the Padres. It all starts at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on FS1. And on the Fox Sports app.
Got my Bryce Harper NL MVP future ticket in. Let's go.
All right. Glad that happened. Time for us to go viral. Kobe Bryant was on the Late Late Show with James Corden last night. They were playing a game where Kobe had to either answer a question or take a bite out of a cow tongue. Take a listen.
Kobe.
Yes.
I would like you to rank these legendary basketball players from best to worst. LeBron James, Michael Jordan, and Kobe Bryant.
Seriously?
Best to worst, or
seriously?
Tuck into that cow tongue, baby.
You know what I'm going to answer, but I'm not going to answer it because then everybody's going to sit there and debate about it. So I'm just going to take a bite of this.
Bite the other end. Bite that end.
Why that end?
Bite that end.
Why?
This you one? Can't answer. No. You can't answer. It's pretty straightforward, I think. What do you reckon?
Fine. No, I'm the best. Michael, second best. LeBron.
Kobe handled that perfectly.
Of course he did.
And that's what he should think. And that's what, listen, if Kareem was forced to answer, Kareem should say he's the best. LeBron said he thought he was the best. He got a lot of criticism for it. We know Michael thinks he's the best.
Michael's the only one that doesn't say he's the best.
Okay.
What?
I saw that Hall of Fame speech.
Have you heard Michael?
Okay, so I don't, I knew this was going to happen.
No,
you're
going to
be like, show me the exact quote.
Yeah, when did he say, well, tell me.
I have enough.
Tell me.
I have enough circumstantial evidence to tell you Michael Jordan believes he's the greatest player of all time. And he should believe that, just like Kobe should believe it and LeBron should believe it. Anybody that's on the all-time pantheon should believe it.
I'd love to set that up here between you two. Play a little James Corden, do a little question or cow tongue.
Just ask me anything you want, Jenna. Okay. I'm an open book.
Let me think about it. I'll get
you
back to you by the end
on
of the
show.
That's not
no
what
problem.
I want you to do at all, actually, especially among us.
Where's Mangini?
Stories to start your morning.
You dated before your wife.
Okay, here we go. You know what? Where's the cow tongue?
Who are you talking to?
Yeah, I know. I didn't know who you were talking to.
I like working out. I like chicks.
Okay.
The old girl.
High school.
Okay, go ahead.
Yearbook. Thunder hosting the Pacers. Paul George stepping up against his former team last night, scored 31 points in a Thunder win. Hey, Thunder had to go on a 24-0 run to do it,
goodness.
Though. OKC has won just two of their last seven. They're now in seventh place in the West, one game ahead of the Spurs. See, what do you make of the Thunder right now?
Man, you can't. What Thunder team's going to show up? It's like the Celtics. Now, the Thunder gave us a good stretch of basketball. It's like, wow, they could be dangerous, but they don't shoot the ball. Nick talked about the offense in the NBA. You need to understand to be able to do it. They're one of the worst, if not the worst, shooting team from deep that we're going to have in the playoffs. So I don't have a lot of hope for a team that's shooting that bad.
Listen, they're an extraordinary defensive team, but to beat a good team in the postseason, to get past the second round, and maybe to get past the first round, depending on their matchup, it's going to have to be a two-week stretch where they shoot well. But can they shoot well for 6 weeks, which is what it would take to make the NBA Finals? No, they can't. So much like last year, this Thunder team, exciting, fun, but has a defined ceiling.
All right, moving on. Anthony Davis has made it known that he wants out of New Orleans. Not a surprise to us or fans or the Pelicans or to his former teammate, DeMarcus Cousins. In a recent interview, Boogie proclaimed once the Pelicans didn't re-sign him, he knew AD would want out. Nick, what do you make of this?
This is obviously 100% accurate. Now, AD might have wanted, we might have found out this summer that AD wanted out if they had re-signed Boogie.
Right.
This summer, he might have turned down the extension.
Right.
But there is a 0% chance if they re-sign Boogie that AD midseason demands a trade and the season goes to hell.
But, Nick, you said this last year when DeMarcus was hurt. I don't care that he's hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, because you have to invest in AD and bring in DeMarcus, their relationship. DeMarcus playing the best basketball of his career. Both of them thriving on the court together. Man, Drew Holiday. Of course.
It was such an emotional letdown for Anthony Davis that coming off the best season of his pro career with the best teammate he's ever had to see him leave and they get nothing in return. That's what set this entire thing into motion. So Boogie is 100% correct.
You see that duplication? You see that? I gave you credit.
You think I don't give you credit? See, you should listen to the radio show, man. I credit you all up and down it.
To the NFL now, Jordy Nelson, that would require him to
My buddy
to the
Johnny's
show.
Listening. And you don't give secret.
Jordy Nelson has called it a career, retiring after 11 seasons. Jordy spent his first 10 years with the Packers, where he ranked second in franchise history in touchdown receptions, third in catches, and fifth in receiving yards. See how impressive was Jordy's career?
Jordy had an impressive career. If you look at the line of good wide receivers that have come out of Green Bay, guys that they have developed, started with Donald Driver, you know, with this quarterback, man, Brett Favre and our Aaron Rodgers, Donald Driver, Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, of those three, they all had good careers together. Also, they had good quarterbacks throwing to them. So it helps with your career when you have a star. We saw 1 year after getting away from Aaron Rodgers, his career got away from him.
Listen, he was a touchdown machine at the peak of his career. And I was in Kansas City when he was at K-State, which is about an hour and a half west of where I was living in a team we covered. If you'd have told me when I was watching him at K-State he was going to have a 10-year NFL career, lead the NFL in touchdowns a season or two, I would have said no chance at all. I think he had an outstanding career. He's one of the better receivers in the history of that franchise, which has been around 100 seasons. So all the credit in the world, Jordy Nelson, an excellent career.
Yeah, your law firm don't represent
people. We do not.
Finally, Joel Klatt's mock draft is out on FoxSports.com. He's got Kyler Murray going number one overall to the Cardinals. If that were to happen, Josh Rosen would likely be on the trading block. Our guy Klatt also reporting that three teams, the Chargers, the Pats, and the Giants, are all interested in dealing for Rosen. Nick, which team most needs to deal for quarterback Josh Rosen?
Well, credit to Joel because he's been on this. And the Chargers were an interesting team I didn't see coming, but makes sense. They got one of these class of 04 quarterbacks. Class of 04 quarterbacks we talk about. Eli, who is trying to get pushed out the door or not pushed out the door, depending on who you listen to. Big Ben, who obviously is still playing at a very high level. There's also Phillip Rivers, who just had, his wife had, their ninth child. And I don't know how much longer he's going to play. So the Chargers are interesting. But the team that needs him the most is obviously the Giants. The team that the entire league should hope does not get him is the Patriots. Because that's just a perfect fit for the Patriots to be able to hit the ground running when Brady's done. You were talking about how what a bargain he is for whomever trades for him. And I think people think, well, yeah, because he's first-round quarterback. But because, as you mentioned yesterday, the signing bonus has been paid, he makes whoever trades for him, if he is traded, they pay him $550,000, $650,000,
yes,
$750,000. Wow. That's it.
Even if you take the fifth-year option.
Right. So the fifth-year option, because he was a top-10 pick, is going to be upwards of probably $17, $18 million bucks. But just work that in.
Yes.
So then it's 4 years, $20 million.
Sign me up.
Right. And even if he doesn't play for the first 2 years.
Right.
And so for the Giants, he obviously would play sooner than in either of those other two places. Chargers or New England, they would expect him, of course, not to play at all this year and maybe not for a couple years, but it would still be worth it. The other part of this that I thought was really interesting from Joel was saying they have one firm offer of a second-round pick.
Yeah,
no one has yet offered a first-round pick, and that's what they're holding out hope for. It also, though, to your point yesterday, Jenna, speaks to Rosen's hearing this. and what this will do if he stays there to his confidence moving forward and the team's ability to be like, man, it was all lies. We always believed in you.
No, I think it'll inject a little confidence in him to know that there are teams out there, good teams out there, good organizations out there that want him. It's if he does stay that I think that's where you take the biggest bruise, obviously,
of course,
to your confidence and what this will do, for, especially after the year he had actually playing.
This is the thing. Wherever he's sitting right now, he's not the same that he was even at the end of the season. Because once Kyler decided, once Cliff got the head coaching job, once the intel started getting in Kyler, is he going to play in the NFL? He decides he is going to play. Then he goes from I'm in pro baseball to now I'm the number one pick in the draft. And the great things that the coach has been saying about him, his psyche, I believe, will be damaged forever in Arizona. The only way to repair that is Bill, to get him somewhere else where he wouldn't have to play immediately and he can sit and learn under quarterbacks that have had success in the league and then go on to have a very good career.
But I would say to any team out there that's thinking about trying to trade for Josh Rosen, go back to what your draft profile of him was, what your scouting report of him was after UCLA, because the very smart football writer Warren Sharp pointed this out yesterday. The Arizona Cardinals, according to his rankings, 32nd. Ranked pass blocking offensive line, 32nd ranked rushing attack, and they had a head coach that the team thought deserved to be fired after 1 year. Who would have been successful there? So that 3-10 season when he was the starter, the 55% completions, like how much that was on him and how much of that would Darnold have looked the same way? How would Josh Allen have looked? How would any of the first round quarterbacks other than Baker, who seems to be in a different class than these guys? So if the Patriots hand off the baton from Brady to Rosen, it's the AFC East just for the next, it won't just be 20 years, it'll be 30 years in my eyes. So the Giants are the team that I think should make this move if he is available.
Warren Sharp makes a great point about that. But I do remember one of the great quarterbacks, the only one that I believe suffered through a season like that, and it was Troy Aikman. He went through that 1-15 season. But people in the football know, thought that Troy Aikman was special. Last year, what we saw with Josh, he didn't look special. He looked very, very average to questionable. Does he have the guts it takes to be a quarterback? Not can he throw. Is he accurate? It takes a certain amount of guts
to
be. Yes, and to be able to get beyond what he visually saw last season.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of First Things First a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio design. Sign up at first.robinhood.com.
All right, let's move on to Big Ben now. With both Lev Bell and Antonio Brown now gone, all focus has turned back to the Steelers quarterback. His leadership or lack thereof has been a big topic of discussion this offseason. A number of former Steelers have shined light on Roethlisberger's questionable ways, while multiple current players have defended the quarterback. Mike Tomlin was asked about Big Ben. Take a listen.
I have no problem with his play or his leadership. I've heard some of the scuttlebutt in which you mentioned. I'm focused on the guys that are within our group and on our team. I think that's what's appropriate for me. I have no reaction to former Steelers and things of that nature. You know, we were a 9-6-1 football team last year. We all need to look in the mirror in terms of what we do and how we do it, starting with me. And so that's the approach that I'm taking. That's the approach that I'll ask him to take, and not in response to any criticism from the outside or anything of that nature, just doing what's appropriate in terms of us being as good as we need to be.
So you joked earlier, what else is he going to say, obviously, when asked about his quarterback? But what did you make of what Mike Tomlin had to say?
Well, I've also been listening to Mike Tomlin since all the three Bs have been together. I listened to everything he said about all of them. Man, he didn't tell us Antonio was freelancing. He didn't tell us Antonio was doing all, showing up when he wanted to, had a different set of rules. L. Bell, he ain't never say nothing about him. He had got suspended. He never said nothing negative about him. Never say anything negative. That's the way coaches are supposed to coach. It's a pact that the coach tells you. I'm never going to speak bad about you in the media. And I never expect you to speak bad about your teammates and your coaches. So when you're wrong, I'm going to take the blame for it. That's what coaches do. That's the partnership you have with coaches. So, yes, I expect Mike Tomlin, because I know what you've been telling me the last several years, bruh. I've been listening to you. So now you want me to be like, of course he's going to say that about Ben. But forget what the talking people on TV say. You can't disregard people that have been in the locker room. Because there is a clear distinction. The people that have left the locker room outside of James Harrison have criticized Ben and his overall leadership. Now, James Harrison said something that you need to be a grown man and go across there and address that with Ben and make yourself available to him, which he did. But also, Ben came into the locker room that he was already a part of. These other guys came into the locker room that Ben was already running.
Right.
So for me, forget what I know. Forget all the coaches that I know. Forget all the players that I know. Forget my opinion. I'm going to listen to people like Ryan Clark. I'm going to listen to people that put on the chin strap with you because they have the real intel. And when they start letting that family business out, it's got to be forced out because, man, we lie for years about our teammates. Man, we don't tell the truth because it's something we have agreed to do. It ain't no one else's business. They weren't there. But these people didn't make this stuff up about Ben.
Right, listen, like I believe in my heart that Chris Carter loves and respects me. But I won't really know how Chris feels about me until one day, however long in the future, he and I aren't on this TV show together and somebody asks him about me. Because until then, you know what Chris says when someone asks him about Nick? Nothing but great things. And I think he's being mostly honest, but he's also being a good teammate.
Yeah,
exactly. But that's being a good teammate. And you know what? Mike Tomlin, people can criticize him whatever he wants. He's a good teammate. Mike Tomlin's been thrown under the bus. Big Ben has not kept his pact on that. I'm not gonna criticize you, you're not gonna criticize me. Big Ben's like, well, half that sounds awesome. The other half, we'll see.
Right.
And so, but Mike Tomlin has been consistent with this. But the other thing is this, like, this is who Mike Tomlin is going to the dance with and is gonna have to try to go home with. Like,
especially at this point, with all the moves that happened in the offseason.
Absolutely right. So all he can do is talk good about him. And the other thing is, because a lot of folks in Pittsburgh very, very upset with me and this show think we are too critical of Ben Roethlisberger. Let me make this very clear. Of course, there aren't seven quarterbacks in the league you would trade Ben for. Even given all the off-the-field stuff, the on-the-field production, what a warrior he is, and his ability to make big plays in big spots makes him worth all the nonsense that surrounds him. It's just frustrating because the nonsense doesn't have to be there. It's a relatively easy fix. Mm-hmm. Talk a little less. Be a little more bland. Take a page out of Eli's playbook and just say, gosh, I don't know. Probably my fault. You know, Odell left. Man, Odell's the greatest player I ever played with. He's awesome. Love my coaches. Like, there is an element of that that is when you are the face of a franchise that's expected of you. Big Ben's gone his own way on it. But he and Tomlin have to have a great working relationship this year because they're the two best and most important people left in the other organization.
The best team I was ever on was the 1998 team. And we ended up finishing 15-1 the regular season, lost the NFC Championship game overtime to Atlanta Falcons. But in that, we went on two magnificent runs. To start the season, 7-0. Blew out teams on the road in Green Bay on Monday night. Destroyed them. Embarrassed teams. The margin, like, we were blowing everyone out. We go to Tampa Bay, week number 8. Tampa Bay's got a good team. We're undefeated. I've never even said this on TV. We had one of the coaches got himself in a situation, showed up late to the game. Now, there wasn't no way. We were hot about it, too, man. We were upset about it. We weren't going to say anything about that so it would affect Denny Green and his overall leadership. People would have immediately been the question, Denny Green, what kind of team is he running here? No, we just ate that. That's just part of family business. And there's other things that have occurred throughout my career. No, we're not going to tell. So I expect Mike. This is what Mike is supposed to do. And the most significant thing he said was, we were a 9-6-1 football team. everyone associated with the Pittsburgh Steelers need to look at themselves and get better, because that is not the expectation.
Say what you will, he delivers on the field. Who came out of his quarterback class?
Oh, Eli Manning
on his way out. Phillip Rivers, they're already looking potentially to someone to back him up when he's on his way out. We're not talking about who's going to come in. We're talking about extending.
No, he's a stud,
Ben Roethlisberger.
No, he
All right,
is.
Take
great,
a break.
Great player.
Coming up, did the Patriots miss out big time by not trading for Odell or AB? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, former head coach Eric Mangini joins us. Still tan, Eric.
Still
that means it was a real one.
Crazy Wasn't how that
a big
works.
One. all right, Coach, time for our Subway Choice moment. We're talking
Coach,
about...
I knew you before them. Why you get weird when you come here with them?
Is that weird that I got the 10?
Well, I'm just saying how you know.
No, oh. Chris just likes calling people weird.
We're talking about...
We're totally normal.
Cliff Kingsbury and the challenge that lies ahead, coming off a 3-13 season, holes to fill on both sides of the ball. And a little question about the quarterback position. At 39, Kingsbury is not the youngest head coach in the NFL, but he certainly has a way of connecting with his young players. The new Arizona coach said he will allow cell phone breaks for his players every 20 to 30 minutes during team meetings. Coach, you like this approach?
Surprisingly, yes. Here's why: is we brought a learning specialist we brought a learning specialist into the Jets, and one of the things that this woman talked about is that every human being after 20 minutes needs to reset the clock, and you can reset the clock in a lot of different ways. So if you're watching film, it may be turning off the film and doing something on the board or having the guys stand up, but you've got to refocus their attention. Now, the idea of incorporating cell phone breaks, I think, is a variation of that concept. The issue is, if you're going to let them get up in the meeting, leave the room, come back in, it's hard to corral 50 guys and to bring them back in. So it's how much time are you allocating for that? Because by the time they get up, they go do their thing, they come back in, they settle down, they start paying attention, there's a lot of time that's wasted. So if you're doing that every 20 minutes, it could be a little bit cumbersome. So he's going to have to work that out. I like the idea of resetting guys' attention. I don't know if the way he has it in mind right now is really going to work.
So I don't know if this specific idea is the exact right idea, but I do know that there are a lot of smart people that have done studies about when people learn the best, how people work the best, how people are most productive. And we, in big-time companies, corporations, educationally in this country, ignore so much of that data in order to do it the way it's always been done. We know young people learn better after 9:30 in the morning. We know it. But school starts at 8 because it's always started at 8, and so I guess it always has to start at 8. Like, we know that the companies that have more of an open, like the, when, I remember when Google first, they were like, hey, we're going to have free food here and we're going to let people take naps or whatever it is. People thought that was, what are you doing? We know that raises productivity, but a lot of companies are like, are you kidding me? You're at work. You need to be working. So the idea that the NFL would be look at this and say, oh, really? The new young college coach is going to give cell phone breaks. What's next? The team Twitter? Like, okay. But the idea of changing things and embracing information to do things more productively and efficiently and effectively, I will always support. Now, Chris, you and I talked before the show, and this is a good example of I'm also, though, not the people he has to relate to, and how the veteran players will hear we're getting cell phone breaks will land with them, even if there's data behind it, I think is an interesting counterpoint to what I think is a smart, at least, idea.
Well, the thing that I don't like at the first owner's meeting, a guy who has no experience in the NFL coaching, just got fired from his college job, but now he's got something that he thinks is going to be an advantage to his team. I don't care that he thinks it's an advantage. I care that he shared it with the public. He's new. Everything that he said is my first impression. So now I know this doesn't work. I know it's not proven. And I know the study hadn't been done on athletes. It might have been done on normal human beings, but athletes and how they learn, visual learnings. And I haven't been in many football meetings that have been over an hour. It's not like you sit there like a college class, like you're in there for 2 hours watching film. Now, you will have sessions, but you will have breaks. And the NFL schedule, there are so many breaks during the day. From the time you get to that building at 6:30, 7 in the morning, to the time you leave at 5:30 or 6, there are a number of breaks in there. I just don't believe that you need to communicate what you're doing as an organization to people outside. And I know it's not been – tell me, what's the track record with this?
No, but it is certainly – we don't know that this specific thing, the cell phone breaks during NFL team meetings, that study obviously hasn't been done. That hasn't been proven. But because something hasn't been proven doesn't mean it won't be effective.
No, but to Chris's point, this is a little Chip Kelly-esque where you're going to show everybody how innovative you are and how you're going to change the league and how the ideas that you bring in are so revolutionary that nobody's going to ever catch up with it. I don't think it's as extreme as Chip Kelly was. But if you do think it's a good idea, why share it with anybody? To me, the value in ideas are to give you a competitive edge. So the second that you start putting it out there, I think then it becomes an issue. And I'd say the other part of this is once you promise people something, it's hard to go back. And until you've been through an NFL schedule as a head coach, mm-hmm. you may not want to build in those 20-minute breaks every single time. There's times where you may have to go 30 minutes or 40 minutes, and it's just the way it is. I'm not saying it's the peak of efficiency, but when you promise it, it's harder to take
right.
back.
And there is no environment like an NFL locker room. You bring up how do I get them corralled back in? Because, man, there is a lot of horseplay in an NFL locker room. I'm talking about every crazy game, every invention, everything. I mean, if you give a guy a break, they will be going, man, we can go play three hands of cards. Like, we can go play, man. Like, these are the types of things these guys do. So sometimes I think the people Google working with is yeah. not the same right. as the people okay, that's right. we working
that's
with.
That's point. A totally fair critique.
And as a young coach, you're the one that gets sent. Now, he won't have to deal as a head coach. But as a young coach, you got to go in the locker room. Come on, guys.
Let's go.
It's like it's painful at times getting them back in the room.
We're all enamored by the next new, young, bright, wide-eyed coach in the NFL and whatever ideas or ideals that come along with them. I think we loved what Sean McVay did last year. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost as if whatever the next new guy has coming up, oh, that's going to be the new shiny thing and it's most likely going to work. And there's this more open policy to talk about it when you see Sean McVay talking about, oh, we're going to open the offense, we're going to do this. Maybe that sort of laid down the groundwork for
guess
a guy
what
like
Sean McVay, all his that. Experience has been basically in pro football. He's been born and raised in pro football, raised on the NFL sideline, raised in the NFL locker room. And the things that he's doing, they're not new. They're the coaches out there are doing. Most of the stuff he's learned in the league since he's been in the league. Now, he put a different spin on it, but Kyle Shanahan, another one of those up-and-coming young guys, he
came
duplicated
in what his dad did.
A lot of the same stuff that his dad did. So this is not something that someone has done. So Sean McVay, younger than him, there are new, fresh spins on old things. So that's what Sean McVay and what I've seen with him more in Los Angeles compared to what people think. Just because he's young, every idea that he has is not a new one.
Well, and it should be noted, Kevin Clark wrote in the Wall Street Journal in 2015 that Jim Tom Sula in his first year with the Niners, and I know that didn't go well, he did the exact same thing. It was cell phone breaks. It just wasn't a big story because maybe he wasn't as interesting as Cliff Kingsbury. There wasn't Kyler Murray. There's a lot of discussion around the Cardinals this year. My overarching theme of this is innovation can work. And new idea, just because it's the way it's always been done doesn't mean it's the right way. Now, having to deal with people that are, but it's the way I've always done it. And it's the way I'm comfortable. That is a real thing. And that is a real hurdle to get over. And whether or not there is going to be a perceived arrogance of, hey, I'm the new guy who's got fired from Tech, and now I've got the best way to the best practices, I understand that that could rub people the wrong
way.
When
the NFL switched to a new helmet company, new technology, everything, we're going to protect these guys like never before. There were guys that were grandfathered in because they had been in the league double digits. Larry Fitzgerald, Tom Brady. Tom Brady just gave up his old helmet. Even though they had the new technology, they gave him all the information, he was more comfortable with his old helmet. There are things as far as technology and things as far as when you're playing a sport that, yes, I'm more comfortable with it, even if I might be at a little bit of a disadvantage. I don't see this as something new. It's not like they just invented cell phones. To me, I know it's not proven. So anything he tells me, I know he made it up. And I know this age group he's never been with. So to be able to say, I know what the NFL schedule is. I know what guys 21 to 33 want and what they need. To me, that's just he's assuming a lot in doing that.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.